Chapter 45. Quaish clawed at his eyes, making a faint screaming sound. The words, "I'm blind, I'm blind," his pitiful refrain. Grelier put down the pneumatic speaking tube. He leant over the dean, pulling some gleaming ivory-handled optical device from his tunic pocket and peering into the trembling horror of Quaish's exposed eyes. With the other hand, he cast shadows over them, watching the reactions of the twitching irises. "You're not blind," he said, "at least not in both eyes." "The flash." "The flash damaged your right eye. I'm not surprised. You were staring straight at the face of Haldora when it happened, and you have no blink reflex, of course. But we happened to lurch at the same moment. Whatever caused that flash also upset Glaur's machines. It was enough to perturb the optical light path from the collecting apparatus above the garret. You were spared the full effect of it." "I'm blind," Quaish said again, as if he had heard nothing that Grelier had told him. "You can still see me," Grelier said, moving his finger. "So stop sniveling."
"Help me?"
"I'll help you if you tell me what just happened, and also why the hell the Lady Moore is on automatic control." Quaish's voice regained a semblance of calm. "I don't know what happened. If I'd been expecting that, do you think I'd have been looking at it? I imagine it was your friends the Ultras. They professed an interest in Haldora, didn't they? They said they were going to send in instrument packages."
"I think they fibbed," Grelier replied.
"I trusted them." "You still haven't told me about the automatic control. Glaur says we can't stop."
26-hour lockout," Quaish said, as if reciting from a technical manual, "to be used in the event of a complete collapse of Cathedral authority, ensuring that the Lady Moore continues to move along the way until order is restored. All manual control of the reactor and propulsion systems is locked out on sealed, tamper-proof timing systems. Guidance cameras detect the way. Gyroscopes prevent drift, even if there's a loss of all visual cues. Multiply redundant star trackers come online for celestial navigation. There's even a buried inductance cable we can follow if all else fails."
"When was the lockout instigated?"
"It was the last thing Seyfarth did before departing for the Infinity."
"Many hours ago," Grelier thought, "but fewer than 26. So she's going over that bridge and nothing can stop it, short of sabotage."
"Have you tried sabotaging a reactor lately, Grelier? Or 1,000 tons of moving machinery?"
"Just wondering what the chances were."
"The chances are, Sergeant General, that she's going over that bridge."
It was a tiny surface-to-orbit ship, barely larger than the re-entry capsule that had brought Kuri to Ararat. It slipped from the belly of nostalgia for infinity, impelled by the merest whisper of thrust. Through the transparent patches in the cockpit armor, Scorpio watched the huge old ship fall slowly away, more like a receding landscape than another vessel. He gasped. At last he could see the changes for himself. Wonderful and frightening things were happening to the nostalgia for infinity. As she made her slow approach to the surface holdfast, vast acres of the hull were peeling away, sheets of biomechanical cladding and radiation shielding breaking loose, like flakes of sloughed skin. As the ship approached Hela, the pieces stretched behind her, forming a dark, jostling tail like a comet's. It was the perfect camouflage for Scorpio, permitting him to make his departure undetected. None of it, Scorpio knew, was unintentional. The ship wasn't breaking up because of the unbalanced stresses of its sidelong approach to Hela. It was breaking up because the captain was choosing to fling away entire parts of himself. Where the skin cladding had gone, the ship's innards were revealed in all their bewildering intricacy. And even there, in the solid depths of the nostalgia for infinity, great changes were afoot. The captain's ordinary transformative processes had been accelerated. The former maps of the ship were now utterly useless. No one had the slightest idea how to navigate through those deep districts. Not that it mattered. The living crew were crammed into a tiny, stable district near the nose, and if anyone was alive and warm down in the parts of the ship that were changing, they were only the last wandering elements of the Cathedral Guard. In Scorpio's opinion, it was unlikely that they'd be alive and warm for very much longer. No one had told the captain to do this, just as no one had told him to lower himself towards Hela. Even if there had been a rebellion, even if some of the seniors had decided to abandon Aura, it wouldn't have made the slightest difference. Captain John Brannigan had made up his mind. When he was clear of the tumbling cloud of sloughed parts,
Scorpio told the ship to accelerate harder. It had been a long time since he had sat behind the controls of a spacecraft, but that didn't matter. The little machine knew exactly where it needed to go. Hela rolled below. He saw the diagonal scratch of the rift, and the even fainter scratch of the bridge spanning it. He turned up the magnification, steadied the image and tracked back from the bridge until he made out the tiny form of the Lady Morwenna, creeping towards the edge of the plane. He had no idea what was going on aboard it now. Since the appearance of the Haldora machinery, all attempts to communicate with Quaish or his hostages had failed. Quaish must have destroyed or disabled all the communication channels, no longer wishing to be distracted by outside parties, now that he had finally seized effective control of the Nostalgia for Infinity. All Scorpio could do was assume that Aura and the others were still safe, and that there was still some measure of rationality in Quaish's mind. If he could not be contacted by conventional means, then he would have to be sent a very obvious and compelling signal to stop. Scorpio's ship aimed itself for the bridge. The pressure of thrust, mild as it was, made Scorpio's chest hurt. Valencine had told him he was a fool even to think about riding a ship down to Hela, after what he had been through in the last few years. Scorpio had shrugged. A pig had to do what a pig had to do, he'd said. Grelier attended to Quaish, dribbling solutions into the blinded eye. Quaish flinched and moaned at each drop, but gradually his moans became intermittent whimpers, signifying irritation and disappointment more than pain. "You still haven't told me what she's doing here," Quaish said finally. "That wasn't my job," Grelier replied. "I established that she wasn't who she said she was, and I established that she had arrived on Hela 9 years ago. The rest you'll have to ask her yourself." Rashmika stood up and walked over to the Dean, brushing the Surgeon General aside. "You don't have to ask," she said. "I'll tell you myself. I came here to find you, not because I was particularly interested in you, but because you were the key to reaching the shadows." "The shadows?" Grelier asked, screwing the lid on to a thumb-sized bottle of blue fluid. "He knows what I'm talking about," Rashmika said. "Don't you, Dean?" Even through the mask-like rigidity of his face, Quaish managed to convey his sense of awful realization. "But it took you 9 years to find me." "It wasn't just about finding you, Dean. I always knew where you were. No one ever made a secret of that. A lot of people thought you were dead, but it was always clear where you were meant to be." "Then why wait all this time?" "I wasn't ready," she said. "I had to learn more about Hela and the Scuttlers. Otherwise I couldn't be sure that the Shadows were the right people to talk to. It was no good trusting the church authorities. I had to learn things for myself, make my own deductions. And of course, I had to have a convincing background, so you'd trust me." "But 9 years," Quaish said again, marveling, "and you're still just a child." "I'm 17, and it's been a lot more than 9 years, believe me." "The Shadows," Grelier said. "Will one of you please do me the courtesy of explaining who or what they are?"
"Tell him, Dean,"
Rashmika said.
"I don't know what they are. But you know they exist. They talk to you, don't they? Just the way they talk to me. They asked you to save them, to make sure they weren't destroyed when the Lady Morwenna goes over the bridge."
Quaish raised a hand, dismissing her.
"You're quite deluded."
"Just like Saul Tempier was deluded, Dean. He knew about the missing vanishing, and he didn't believe the official denials. He also knew that the vanishings were due to end, just like the numericists did."
"I've never heard of Saul Tempier."
"Perhaps you haven't," Rashmika said, "but your church had him killed because he couldn't be allowed to speak of the missing vanishing, because you couldn't face the fact that it had happened, could you?"
Grelier's fingers shattered the little blue vial.
"Tell me what this is about," he demanded.
Rashmika turned to him, cleared her throat.
"If he won't tell you, I will. The Dean had a lapse of faith during one of those periods when he began to build up immunity to his own blood viruses. He began to question the entire edifice of the religion he'd built around himself, which was painful for him, because without this religion, the death of his beloved Morwenna becomes just another meaningless cosmic event."
"Be careful what you say," Quaish said.
She ignored him. "During this crisis, he felt compelled to test the nature of a vanishing, using the tools of scientific inquiry normally banned by the church. He arranged for a probe to be fired into the face of Haldora during a vanishing.
"Must have called for some careful preparations," Grelier said. "A vanishing's so brief."
"Not this one," Rashmika said. "The probe had an effect. It prolonged the vanishing by more than a second. Haldori is an illusion. Nothing more. A piece of camouflage to hide a signaling mechanism. The camouflage has been failing lately. That's why the vanishings have been happening in the first place. The Dean's probe added additional stress, prolonging the vanishing. It was enough, wasn't it, Dean?"
"I have no..."
Grelier pulled out another vial, a smoky shade of green this time, and held it over his master, pinched tight between thumb and forefinger. "Let's stop mucking about, shall we? I'm convinced that she knows more than you'd like the rest of us to know, so will you please stop denying it?"
"Tell him," Rashmika said.
Quaish licked his lips. They were as pale and dry as bone.
"She's right," he said. "Why deny it now? The shadows are just a distraction."
He tilted his head towards Vasco and Curry. "I have your ship. Do you think I give a damn about anything else?" The skin of Grelier's fingers whitened around the vial.
"Tell us," he hissed.
"I sent a probe into Haldora," Quaish said. "It prolonged the vanishing. In that extended glimpse I saw... things. Shining machinery, like the inside of a clock, normally hidden within Haldora. And the probe made contact with something. It was destroyed almost instantly. But not before that something, whatever it was, had managed to transmit itself into the Lady Morwenna." Rashmika turned and pointed towards the suit.
"He keeps it in that."
Grelier's eyes narrowed.
"The Scrimshaw suit.
Morwenna died in it," Quaish said, picking his way through his words like someone crossing a minefield. "She was crushed in it when our ship made an emergency sprint to Hela to rescue me. The ship didn't know that Morwenna couldn't tolerate that kind of acceleration. It pulped her. Turned her into red jelly. Red jelly with bone and metal in it. I killed her because if I hadn't gone down to Hela..."
"I'm sorry about what happened to her," Rashmika said.
"I wasn't like this before it happened," Quaish said. "No one could have blamed you for her death." Grelier sneered. "Don't let him fool you. He wasn't exactly an angel before that happened." "I was just a man with something bad in his blood," Quaish said defensively. "Just a man trying to make his way." Quietly, Rashmika said,
"I believe you."
"You can read my face?" he asked.
"No,"
she said. "I just believe you. I don't think you were a bad man, Dean. And now, after all that I've made happen, after what happened to your brother..." There was, she heard, an audible crack of hope in his voice. This late in the day, this close to the crossing, he still craved absolution.
"I said that I believed you, not that I was in a forgiving mood," she said.
"The shadows," Grelier said. "You still haven't told me what they are, or what they have to do with the suit."
"The suit is a holy relic," Rashmika said, "his one tangible link with Morwenna. In testing Haldora, he was also validating the sacrifice she'd made for him. That was why he put the receiving apparatus inside the suit, so that when the answer came, when he discovered whether or not Haldora was a miracle, it would be Morwenna who told him."
"And the shadows?" Grelier asked.
"Demons," Quaish said.
"Entities," Rashmika corrected. "Sentient beings trapped in a different universe, adjacent to this one."
Grelier smiled. "I think I've heard enough." "Listen to the rest," Vasco said. "She's not lying. They're real, and we need their help very badly."
"Their help?" Grelier repeated.
"They're more advanced than us," Vasco said. "More advanced than any other culture in this galaxy. They're the only thing that are going to make a difference against the inhibitors." "And in return for this help, what do they want?" Grelier asked.
"They want to be let out," Rashmika said. "They want to be able to cross over into this universe. The thing in the suit, it's not really the shadows, just a negotiating agent, like a piece of software. It knows what we have to do to let the rest of them through. It knows the commands we need to send to the Haldora machinery."
"The Haldora machinery?" the Surgeon General asked.
"Take a look for yourself," the Dean said.
The arrangement of mirrors had locked onto him again, beaming a shaft of focused light into his one good eye.
"The vanishings have ended, Grelier.
After all this time, I can see the holy machinery."